Welcome to the Global Band Room, a podcast about bands and musicians across the world. My name is Keith Kelly, and I'm a band director from the west coast of Ireland. Each episode, I sit down with musicians to talk about their stories and bands and how they're making an impact in their communities. Before we start, you can find out more about the podcast and the people and stories that we feature over at globalbandroom.com, and you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Global Band Room. All of the Global Band Room podcasts are brought to you by Kaleidoscope Adventures. Find out how you can travel beyond expectations at mykatrip.com. Now on with the show. Mark Connor, it is an absolute privilege to have you in the Global Band Room. You're the OG. You're the guy that a lot of us podcasters started listening to quite a number of years ago. It's great to have you on my podcast.
Oh, thanks, Keith.
Mark, we go back quite a way, actually. We've known each other for quite some time, and I've been listening to your podcast since the very beginning. I think it was an interview with Johan de May that got me listening initially, because I was working with Johan quite a bit at the time, and I wanted to find out more about him, and I came across your podcast, and I've been listening ever since. But before we start getting into the podcast, how are you keeping?
I'm doing quite well. I've got a new job, new gig, and it's going really well. It's a lot of fun to be back full time in the classroom and putting all the things I learned as the host of the Everything Band podcast to work.
For sure, yeah. And so there has been some times where you've actually been the person that has been interviewed on various podcasts, and even once on your own podcast, I believe, as well. Your career is as a composer and a conductor and as an educator, first and foremost. People know you from the podcast, but I wanted to kind of get to know you and your background and what got you started as a musician. Tell me a little bit about the origin story of Mark Connor.
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, we had a piano in the family living room and no one played it. My sister took lessons for a little while, but I used to noodle around on that thing and try to make up songs and, you know, pretending I was, you know, a composer or a pianist. And so I remember that as a child. And when the opportunity came up in between third and fourth grade to pick an instrument, I remember going down to the basement of the elementary school and all the instruments were there. And I remember I wanted to play the trombone and my best friend wanted to play the trumpet. So we ended up playing the trumpet. Fateful decision for me. I always joke that I probably have a face that's more suited for low brass than for high brass. But I stuck with it and somehow managed to get to where I am. So I played, you know, all through high school, and I went to college in Northern California at a place called Chico State, which for a while was notorious as the number one party school in the United States. not that I did any of that, of course.
I was gonna ask, did you party much in college?
No comment on that. No comment. That's a long time ago, another life ago. But I got my degree in general music. I was actually a music education major, and my junior year, my music ed professor actually got cancer and passed away. And it was a time when I was having a lot of self-doubt about myself as a musician and a lot of self-doubt about what I wanted to do. And so I sort of discovered composition in those years. And I made a decision at the time, which is, in retrospect, is a bad decision. I should have stuck with the music ed degree at the time. But I got the degree in general music, and then I went and got a master's in composition and theory. And, I thought I was going to be a college professor, and there's more to that story. And so I was doing my master's, and during my final semester of my master's degree, I went home to see my parents in California. And my father was working at an all-boys Catholic school in California. It was 7 through 12. And the principal asked him if he could meet with me to talk about, you know, band. And so I thought, no problem. So I probably went down there with jeans and a T-shirt. And we ended up talking for 2 hours. And at the end of the conversation, he offered me the job if I wanted to start the band program there. I had no idea it was an interview, of course. I was like, you know, completely naive to everything at the time. I was so young, 26 or 27. And so I ended up doing that for 4 years and had a lot of success relative to the position, you know, starting a band. By the time I left, it was a really nice program. And, you know, when I look back, there are a lot of things that I wasn't doing well, but I didn't know at the time, because of course you don't know what you don't know.
So what did you learn from starting a program? Lots of educators go into pre-established programs, but from starting a program, it's a very different experience, right?
Yeah, I was really fortunate because there was a good feeder. There were three Catholic elementary schools or two Catholic elementary schools in the city, and they had a really good band director. So the kids were coming out of sixth grade into seventh grade with a lot of skills. And so that really helped a lot. So my first year, you know, my first day, I had 12 kids in the band, and most of them were percussion or saxophone, excuse me. And, but then I invited the girls from the girls' school across the street. I got permission from the faculties, and that first year I had 25 kids in the band, and they were good. They were seventh, eighth, and ninth graders primarily, but we were able to do like 3 years from Gloucester and the Newcastle March and a few things like that, that really, you know, good pieces of music, and they really did a good job. And, you know, maybe I'm playing down my part in the whole thing, but I do feel like I was sort of stumbling my way through. What I've always found is that just having a lot of optimism and being positive, there's you can get a lot of mileage out of that, with both the kids and with the donors and with the adults around the program. The adults, you notice I never consider myself the adult as the band director.
It's all the parents and the administrators, right?
Yeah.
But you are right, though. Optimism gets you a long way. I mean, my background is very similar to yours in that my first gig as a band director was with a brand new program, and you get to learn your trade alongside the kids learning there, mm-hmm. Learning how to be band members too, right? What if you were to give any advice to anyone starting a program now? What would it be?
Oh, I would say, my advice is way different now than it would have been 25 years ago, but. I mean, it would be have a plan, be very, very patient, show a lot of grace and kindness because it's going to be a rocky road. And don't be afraid to ask for things that you need. The community out there, people will support band programs. People will support the arts. I don't know how it is in Ireland, but I know in the United States, people will donate a lot of things for band, and because people believe in music and they believe in the power of music for young people.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely patience is certainly key too, right? Because there's a lot of periods where you'll see progress, but there's a lot of periods where you won't see progress whatsoever.
Oh,
not just in the kids too, just in the entire program.
Yeah, no doubt. You have to be a relentless recruiter. You have to just talk to kids and talk to people and just spread your vision and your ideas for a big future.
Now, you have had a lot of success as a composer too, Mark. Where did that start? Was that something that you were doing from early on in college, or was that something that came?
Yeah, I started composing in college, you know, in theory classes. I really liked the counterpoint stuff. And so I ended up reading all the counterpoint texts, you know, starting with Fuchs and, you know, reading all these tomes of counterpoint and starting to write music. And when I had that transition with my band director, that's where I turned, was to writing. And so when I got my master's in composition theory, I was just writing chamber music, some string orchestra stuff. But then when I got that job at the high school, I stopped composing mostly for 4 years while I was in that job. But I always wanted to get a doctorate in composition. And so I went back to Florida State, got my doctorate in composition, and I ended up writing a band piece there as part of an internship during my degree. That was the first piece that I ended up publishing. But band music wasn't my focus during that degree, nor for the first couple of years after I finished that degree. It took me a while to come back to the band world. But that was a fateful decision too, because once I started writing for band, I started to see some success, both commercially and personally. I felt more at home. It was like I had come home again after being out in the wilderness. Now, not that writing for strings or writing chamber music is out in the wilderness, but it never really fit who I am as a person and as a composer. I'm not much of a modernist. I mean, I could do it, and I could be experimental and write that kind of music, and I know all the techniques, but it never really felt completely honest to what I wanted to do and who I am. And so band music certainly does, and especially band music for younger students.
And are you continuing to write now, Mark? Is it something that you still have a passion for?
Oh yeah, it's more difficult because this job, the new job I have right now, is taking up, filling the time, as they say. And I'm sort of in that Robert Frost poem where I'm, you know, looking down the road and seeing the fields fill up with snow while, you know, but yeah, you know, it's, I don't know what's happening now. I am published by Robert W. Smith's company. And of course, Robert just passed away tragically. And so, you know, as far as I know, that's going to continue forward, but, there's certainly a lot of uncertainty that, you know, around that and the publishing aspect of what I do.
I know Robert was very supportive of your work over the years too. And, it is very sad to, we haven't had a chance to kind of talk about it on the podcast, but it is very sad to hear of Robert's passing. He did so much work for, not just as a composer, but for bands and as a clinician and as a conductor. And, I know he was very supportive of you and many other composers too, right?
Yeah, it was monumental, the work he did. I mean, and a lot of it was behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, we know his music, we know his presence, and we know the things that he did. You know, you always saw him at Midwest, he was ubiquitous. But he worked so hard all the time to advocate for bands and to create programs and to create opportunities and to fight for what we do. And it's just really sad. It's untimely, and it's just really sad. There's nothing to say about it beyond that.
Well, let's move on to talking about how we met and how many people know about you, Mark, is through the Everything Band podcast. As I said, I kind of half joked at the beginning calling you the OG, because there's been a lot of band podcasts, particularly during the pandemic, right? My own podcast being one example of, mm-hmm. of a pandemic podcast. But you were doing it a long time before anyone else in the band world, really. What got you started doing these interviews? Had you a podcast in mind?
You know, I was listening to two podcasts. I was listening to Andrew Hitz's Entrepreneurial Musician and Garrett Hope's The Composer on Fire, which then became The Portfolio Composer. And they're both interview-style podcasts. And Andrew Hitz, in particular, on his entrepreneurial podcast, always talked about trying to find the blue ocean, meaning the ocean that's not red from all the sharks that are already there. And, you know, interview podcasts in the band world were the blue ocean. There was only one that I knew of, which was Don Stinson's podcast. And so I saw an opportunity to add to that particular genre. And the only other one that was really big at the time was Darcy's. She predates me. But Darcy's mm-hmm. podcast is a different format. You know, that's more about being in her classroom and talking about the actual nuts and bolts of teaching. I thought, gee, you know, at the time I was a college professor teaching theory. And so I thought, well, you know, I have a lot of contacts in the college world. Let me start there. And so I started interviewing college directors, college composers. And then eventually I took the show to everybody. And I have like 212 interviews or something crazy. Everybody that I could think of at the time, you know, and there's still 1,000 more people I could interview, but unfortunately it looks like I'm coming to the end. I've run out of steam, really, is what it is. I have two interviews in the can that I'm still editing slowly, and a third that a composer who I interviewed has edited, but I lost my side of the audio, so we've got problems with that. You know, I'm sort of in that stage where it feels like more work than it used to. Mm-hmm. For a long time, for like 4.5 years, I never missed a week. And it was just like, it was just something that I did. It was part of my life. Every Sunday night, I edited a podcast episode for 3 hours. And then one day I woke up and I said, I really don't want to do this anymore. You know, it's that scene from Forrest Gump where he's running and he's running and he's running. And then mm-hmm. he suddenly stops and he says, I want to go home. that's kind of how my podcast journey has been. And so I need to finish the episodes that I have in the can. I need to apologize for those who I never got to interview and put out a final goodbye and sort of just end it, I think. But I do appreciate you calling me the OG. Dylan Maddox calls me that too.
Yeah, for sure. Me and Dylan have talked about you quite a bit, and we've met, all three of us have met in person as well.
It's funny that you would say that, because, you know, I just started it like, let's see how this goes. I'll do five of these and see if anyone listens. And then pretty soon it became 50 and then 200. And I, Lord knows how that happened.
Well, I mean, it's been I said it to you back in, I think, 2017. I remember contacting you, thanking you for the podcast. And I want to do that again right now before we go any further. I think music education, being a band director, whether it's a full-time gig in the States or whether you're international, and a lot of the directors and a lot of the people I talk to are international, it's a very isolating job. You may not know another band director that you can talk to from one day to the next, and maybe you get a chance if you're lucky, particularly if you're in the States, to go to a state convention. So having an interview style podcast like yours to hear from other directors, to hear from people having the same struggles, having the same things to celebrate as you, meant a lot to me as a band director on the west coast of Ireland, not really surrounded by anyone that I can meet on a day-to-day basis. So I want to say a big thank you, and I'm sure other people feel exactly the same.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's meant a lot to me, and I know that you're finishing up now, and I want to say a big thank you for myself and for everyone else that has had a chance to listen to the podcast over the years.
Oh, you're welcome. That's why I started it, because I remember being a young band director, 27 years old, and not really knowing what to do, and then reaching out to a local band director who was gracious and who helped me. And that was the only connection I had to any outside information, outside knowledge. I mean, I could buy books or I could go observe other directors, but it wasn't like where I could just reach out and ask questions on Facebook, for example. And so I wanted to make sure that I had a voice out there that was sort of doing exactly what you said, bringing people into band rooms, like bringing someone like Robert W. Smith down to earth so people could hear what he sounds like and what he believes, and having Johann de May talk about his remarkable skyrocket of a career and those sorts of things, just so that it humanized the whole profession and it gave something back to the profession. Because honestly, band gave me my start. Band is everything to me as far as my musical career. I know I have a doctorate and I have all these sort of plaudits from that, but it's really about the band. It's really about the experiences that I had sitting in the chair and on the podium. Those are my most meaningful musical experiences. And I just wanted to do something to give it back, because at the time I wasn't a band director. I was a college professor. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say the remarkable thing about the podcast is it completely upended my career. I was comfortable teaching theory. I quit teaching theory. I became a part-time band director just so I could get back into the field. My wife sort of was gracious enough to allow me to do that and support us for a couple of years. And now I've landed in a dream band director job. I'm the head band director at a K-12 school. I've got fourth grade, fifth grade, middle school and high school band, and I've got two assistant directors. It's amazing. I'm like, I don't know how this happened. I feel like I woke up and got hit with the lucky stick. But people will tell me that I guess that's not true, but it feels like it some days.
I know anyone that's listened to this podcast and has listened to your interviews over the years knows how lucky those students and that school is going to be having you there, Mark.
The only thing more exciting than the anticipation of traveling around the world with your band is actually traveling. But in music, we all know that the practice, the journey, is just as important as the performance. From planning your route, researching the attractions, and diving deep on the local culture, that journey can be thrilling. However, sometimes the practicalities of turning that dream tour into a reality can rain on that parade a little. Luckily, with 30 years of experience, Kaleidoscope Adventures can help. When you plan a tour with a world-class international team of travel and performance experts, you can enjoy the process and focus on getting your band ready for the experience of a lifetime. When you're ready to travel beyond expectations, contact Kaleidoscope Adventures at mykatrip.com.
Tell me, from all of the interviews that you've done, it's a really unfair question to ask. I wouldn't be like to be asked this question myself, but is there any standout, not maybe not your favorite interview, but is there any standout?
Well, interview? They're all great. They're all great. And they've all been a lot of fun, but there's a couple that were either entertaining or something about them was special. The one with John Mackey was very funny just because he was so, and I don't think he'd mind me saying this, he didn't want to do it. I had to really kind of like be on him. And then, you know, when he did it, he was like, oh, this was easy. And, you know, so it was, it just really sort of stands out in my mind. You know, there's some interviews that I did where it's like, I was in awe of the people as I was talking to them. You know, I don't want to name names because, you know, I don't want to put anyone on the spot or make them uncomfortable. But, you know, it was really great to talk to people. I really remember the first year teacher I talked to. I remember I just had an interview with a girl who finished her first year of teaching, and I don't even know if she's still teaching anymore. But, you know, I call them the middle school power teachers, but the teachers like Tiffany Hitz and Darcy Vaught Williams and Aris Golden and Cindy Wagner and these teachers, Renee Todd, these are the great middle school teachers in the country. And those have been amazing interviews because those were really like truly, these are special people, these women and men who teach middle school so well. And those really stand out to me too, because they've become good friends and people that I lean on for advice.
Yeah, I've always loved that about your podcast as well, is that there is this range of people that you've talked to, from brand new teachers to college professors to middle school teachers, everything band, right? It's everyone that's involved at all levels of band. I've really appreciated that, and I feel like I've been able to get a lot out of the conversations you've had with composers, but also conversations that you've had with middle school educators. I mean, almost completely different careers, but there's something incredibly important to get from both of those. Out of all of the, now that you've started this new dream job, and do you think that there's any lessons that you've learned over your time as a podcaster that you'll bring to that new job?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I can't, it's really hard to enumerate these things. And I've tried on multiple occasions to try to, what have I gotten from the podcast? And I think I did a whole episode on this just where I talked about my Midwest presentation, because that's what it was all about, was this idea of what have I gotten? And yeah, I have ideas about what's important or like sort of techniques and things like that. But really what's been focused is what's most important, and that's putting the student first and, you know, making sure that you're taking care of your fundamentals, making sure that you're taking care of the things that really matter to make great music. I wish I had a way to just put it, to say it so simply, but it's difficult because it's all rattling around in my head, and I just sort of apply it holistically, not in, you know, discrete bits, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, but definitely.
And plus, you know, after talking to so many people, what you really get is a belief in what we do. This sort of unwavering belief that I'm doing the right thing, because that's what I got over and over and over from these educators and from these composers, is the value of what it is that we do.
And again, like, you know, because we can be so isolated, sometimes when you're not hearing that from people, you can start to question that, right? Like, why am I doing, particularly right during the pandemic, we're just out of this really difficult time for the whole world. But I think there was a unique difficulty, and Mark, we actually did some projects together during the pandemic. Actually, we had our students do some online workshops with each other, and
yeah, it was so hard to pull off too. It was like,
for sure, getting kids to practice and record.
Oh my gosh! it makes my head hurt thinking about it.
one of the things that I've spoken to quite a few people that you know, either they're band directors or educators, you know, there was this questioning about what we did, because it was one of the first things to be shut down, right? Band was this thing that across the world we couldn't do. And it's like in the moment of the pandemic, it seemed like such an irrelevant thing that we were involved in at times. Mm-hmm. It's like, why do we do what we do? You know, it's not a frontline job. I know I questioned myself quite a lot about, you know, the work that I did. You've spoken to quite a few people during the pandemic and since the pandemic. What did you learn from that time, from the last couple of years?
I think it's perseverance. I mentioned that I had a chat with Mark Speedy for the podcast, who's a president of CBDNA, about the aerosol study that they commissioned. How many people were working behind the scenes to either get us back in the classroom, create flex band music for us to use, come up with solutions, whether they're masks or whatever it was we could do. But I think it's perseverance. It's the idea that what we do was going to come back. And I know a lot of people doubted that. And I know that we all talked about how maybe band was going to change forever. But here we are, and we're back, and kids are doing it again. And it's almost like it never stopped. And fortunately, the pandemic is something that I don't think about very often, because every time I do, it makes me anxious.
That's fair.
So I think that's what I got out of it. It's just, again, going back to the first things I started talking about, it's that sort of relentless optimism. It's one of the reasons I really love the band community. Mm-hmm. Not only is it friendly and welcoming, but it's optimistic as a whole.
For sure. Well, on that optimistic note, Mark, I want to move to the final part of my show. And this is a section of the show that I used to call Off the Rostrum. But in honor of your good self, I have renamed Everything Except Band, where we learn about our guests. Everything Except Band, where we learn about our guests outside of the band world. I know me and you have talked jokingly about maybe having a dad podcast at some point.
Because I'm doing that so well right now.
But this might be a little glimpse of maybe a future project where we learn about each other outside of that band world. So these are some quick fire questions about fun things that you do outside of band. So I'll start with my first question. What is the last movie that you watched?
Oh my goodness. Like in my living room or at the movie theater?
Anywhere.
Oh, well, the last movie I saw in the theater was, I did the whole, what was it? It was the Barbie and then, oh my gosh.
The Barbenheimer.
Barbenheimer. Yes, I did Barbenheimer. I did Oppenheimer first, then Barbie. And I still don't know which one I like better. So, as far as home, I honestly, I can't remember. I'm sure I watched something recently.
For sure. Which if you were to advise people on Barbie and Oppenheimer, which one should they go and see first?
Oh, I think see Oppenheimer first and then go see Barbie. I think the again, the arc is a little more optimistic going that direction.
For sure. Well, I'm interviewing you a couple of days before Halloween. I can date the podcast with that. What is your favorite Halloween movie? These aren't all movie questions, but what is your favorite Halloween movie?
Oh, my favorite Halloween movie. Well, I gave up scary movies sometime when I turned in my 40s. I don't remember exactly when. But I think my favorite scary movie, simply because it scared the pants off of me, is The Exorcist. I don't know of a movie that's more frightening to me than that. And I remember the first time I saw it, I was haunted by that movie for a while. It's just something so evil about it that is just frightening.
Will you watch the remake that comes out fairly soon?
I don't think so, Keith. I think I'll pass on that. My daughter is 12, so she's just starting to feel that urge to watch scary things. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, we've started on Stranger Things with my son, who's 12 as well. So.
Yeah.
What is your, or where is your favorite place to go on vacation?
Oh, my favorite place to go on vacation. Oh man, I've been to so many great places. I lived in the Central Coast of California for a long time. So I love, we're going to, at Christmas, we're going to go see my sister in Monterey. And so it's so beautiful in Monterey, California. But my wife's from the coast of the Black Sea coast of Bulgaria. So I feel like this is, I've got such great options for vacations. But I think either one of those places. And then also I have a brother that lives on Cape Cod.
Ooh, nice.
He became very wealthy as a lawyer. So if you want to be, if you want to make money, go be a lawyer, not a banker.
that's a good piece of advice there.
So that's also another great place. And all three of those have the they have family there. But I hope to get to Ireland one day and see where my ancestors came from.
Well, the Connors are always welcome back anytime.
There were a lot of us.
For sure. Almost as many as the Kellys, right? what is, if you could have a meal or even a drink with any celebrity, who would it be?
Oh, boy. Do they have to be alive?
No.
Well, I think I'd love to have a meal with Frederick Fennell. Just because I never got a chance to meet him, and you know he was alive when I was first teaching, but I just had no awareness of who this person was, and I feel like I missed out just by a couple of years. And so, you know, as opposed to like you know trying to poison Hitler or something like that, you know? I'll go with something a little more banal,
something a little nicer. Now you do get a buzzer for that answer because that is a banned answer, but
it still is a good answer.
I had the opportunity to meet Frederick Fennell.
Oh, you did?
When I was 14, he came over to a festival in Ireland.
Oh, nice.
I played bass clarinet as he conducted me in Alvamar Overture. I didn't get to go to dinner with him though.
As far as my other answer, you know, that whole butterfly effect, sometimes people think they have the best intentions, but you might just unleash something worse. You never know.
For sure. I've watched enough Star Trek episodes too. which leads me on to my next question. Star Trek or Star Wars?
Oh, Star Wars.
Oh, you're a Star Wars guy?
I like them both, but Star Wars was formative for me in my generation. Yeah. I was seven when it came out. My grandmother took me to the theater. It was a thing.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, my very last question then. Burger King or McDonald's?
Oh my goodness. How do you even know this? You're Irish.
Burger King and McDonald's are very popular here. Although we do have an Irish version called Supermax as well, which highly recommended.
All right. Burger King or McDonald's, hurling or football?
Oh, good question.
You know, I think Burger King for a long time had better food, but I'm going to go with McDonald's because it's been more stable and it's never changed.
Good point. Good point. Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, it has been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. I know for anyone that has never heard your own podcast before, there are over 200 episodes that they can go and listen to some of the best interviewing that we have in our band world. So they should go and check that out. Where can people find out more about you now and the podcast and what you're doing as a composer? Where can they go?
Yeah, I have a website, markjconnor.com. The podcast is everythingbandpodcast.com. And, you know, it's all pretty easily Googled. Just make sure that when you Google me that you don't find Mark O'Connor, who's a fiddle player and a very, very well-known fiddle player. That's why I use the J in my middle name. It's not any sort of conceit. It's because I'm trying to keep myself easily accessible from him, who tends to dominate the Mark Connor searches.
Sure, and there's a very well known trumpet player, Mark O'Connor, here in Ireland as well. So,
yeah, there's also a baseball coach for the Baltimore Orioles at some point who shows up in my So yeah, there's a few of us. Again, well, too many Connors.
Too many Connors. We Irish get around. Mark, it has been a real pleasure to have you again. Best of luck with everything in the future, and looking forward to hearing those additional podcasts that come out whenever they do.
They'll come out soon, hopefully, and I'll wrap it up when I have a chance here to kind of gather myself together.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Keith. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much again for joining me and my guests in the band room this week. I'll be back next episode talking to more great guests from around the band world, so head over to wherever you get your podcasts from and make sure you subscribe. If you've enjoyed the episode, maybe even leave us a review and share it with your band buddies. In the meantime, you can stay up to date with me on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at Global Band Room and on our website globalbandroom.com. Until next time, I'll see you back in the band room.